Good morning, members of the court. Adam Curlin representing Mr. Cross, and I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. Members of the court, I want to start briefly with just amplifying a few points with respect to issue number one concerning the propriety of the multiple conspiracy instruction. I think it's important to note that the government at trial really had no real objection to the instruction at the outset. They were simply concerned that that the Tarantino line of cases, if you want to call it that, they wanted the emphasis with respect to the issue that, well, they wanted to be able to get the inference as to, you know, what it takes if you're part of a chain conspiracy. I don't have any quarrel with that. When the government sensed that the district judge, you know, was leaning toward perhaps not giving the instruction, they got a little bit more energized, and they made what I think a fundamental legal misstatement when they argued, and it's cited in my brief, but it's also at 206 in the excerpt of record, where the government argued, and I believe Judge Roberts accepted that in addition to the factual requirements that there be some evidence to support the multiple conspiracy instruction, the government argued that, well, in addition to that, there was the legal issue that the trial judge had to deal with in finding that there was also substantial prejudice. Your Honors, that totally messed everything up, because that effectively meant that the government was asking the trial judge to essentially make a harmless error determination, saying that, well, even if I don't give the instruction, it's harmless error. And effectively, I believe that is the basis of the district court's decision, which is absolutely legally wrong. And again, that's made real clear at page 206 in the excerpt of record, where the government basically says there's a separate legal issue, Your Honor, that apart from all the case law that says it's a factual issue for the jury to decide, there's no substantial prejudice here. And I think that the reason why there's the confusion, and it's the point where the government again basically says, I know this has to be sorted out at the Court of Appeals. In looking at Mathis and Tarantino, those are obviously cases from this court. In both of those cases, the multiple conspiracy instruction was given, and the issue in those cases had to do with sufficiency of the evidence or fatal variance. It's not the issue here. So there's a fundamental difference with respect to trying to cull out, and I just think that legal mistake just messed everything up from the outset. Unless the court has any other questions, one other thing I want to note before I go on to the second issue has to do with one of the government's argument that, well, this is okay because even though the court said you can't say anything about this in closing argument, if you mention this at all in closing argument, you're going to get in trouble, so on and so forth, and there's that big, long colloquy as to exactly what the defense counsel can and can't say. The government argues in their brief that, well, the issue was sufficiently out there because defense counsel was permitted to talk about it in opening statement. We all know that is absolutely legally insufficient, that simply a comment made in opening statement, which then is not backed up by a jury instruction and the admonishment, the proper admonishment that the lawyer's arguments or the lawyer's statements are arguments, not evidence, that obviously can't cure it. Now, getting into the specifics, that even if the court doesn't want to resolve issue one with respect to the facts and circumstances of this case, I want to use the term prosecutorial error the way the ABA recommends as opposed to misconduct, because I don't think there was any intentional malfeasance here, but nonetheless the remedy is still the same.
I just want to ask more.
Sure.
You're moving on from the question of whether there should have been instruction now to what was said in closing argument. Is that what you're about to say?
Yeah. Now, Judge Carlin, obviously they're interrelated, unless the court has any more
questions. No, I'd like to ask about the first question.
Sure, but they're obviously interrelated.
No,
that's fine.
I guess one question is, even if there should have been an instruction, I guess I'm having a little difficulty understanding sort of what the standard of review really should be here. So even if there should have been an instruction and there wasn't one, you don't appear to be disputing that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to have found beyond a reasonable doubt single conspiracy.
My position is that I'm not raising a sufficiency issue. There's sufficient evidence in the record to support the conviction. The case law says that, I can find the site.
I don't want to talk about the case law. I'm just trying to figure out what the rationale for what our review should be. So if it's the case that there is sufficient evidence to have found, as the jury did, that there was a single conspiracy, had there been an instruction, they might also have found that there were multiple conspiracies, or maybe they would have found a multiple conspiracy rather than a single conspiracy. So, but that just sounds like a variance argument at the bottom. That is, at the worst, the jury should, in your view, should have looked to whether there was a multiple conspiracy and maybe would have found it. But then that seems to lead to the same standard that we would review a variance for. And why should the standard be any different than the variance standard, which is you have to show substantial prejudice, or any prejudice, frankly?
Well, okay, Your Honor, the first thing is it's a de novo issue with respect to, as a matter of law, was the instruction.
I'm saying I concede for the moment that it is wrong. We can talk about that in a moment, but we assume for the moment that it was wrong. Now we get to the question of what the level of error is.
And I agree, Your Honor, that it should be substantial prejudice, but there is a caveat that needs to be made to that. The multiple conspiracy instruction would not have said that, well, the issue isn't simply that, well, he was part of both conspiracies. The multiple conspiracy instruction would have said that you may find him not guilty if you find that he's part of a different conspiracy, not the charged conspiracy.
So that's a question of variance, right? That the person might here have been found guilty of a different conspiracy than the exact one he was charged with. So at the worst, under this theory, he would have been found what the jury found him guilty of was the wrong conspiracy. There's no doubt. So why isn't that just a variance argument? Well, why, in the end, isn't that just a question of variance, and then you have to tell us what the prejudice is?
I'll get to the substantial prejudice in a second, but, Your Honor, I think it is slightly different because the instruction, the multiple conspiracy instruction, says that you will find him, if you're given this instruction, you can find him not guilty if you find that he is part of a different conspiracy. Now, what I think happened here, and this sort of melds into the substantial prejudice issue, is that I went back and looked at, when I was reading over the cases in preparation for the argument and looking through the file, there was no unanimity instruction given at all. Judge, I'm sorry, but what happens,
though, as to which conspiracy you're saying, right?
The unanimity instruction.
What would you have been looking for? Well, it was a unanimity instruction in the sense that everybody had to find him guilty.
Well, that was it, though. There was nothing. Yes. There was nothing more than that. But here's the thing.
That's generally all that we've required. That we have not been a specific unanimity circuit.
Judge Sandel, that's correct. But see, the problem, it gets to the particular facts in this case. The defendant wanted to argue, and I believe there was substantial evidence in the record that would have supported the instruction, that if it's just the buyer-seller conspiracy between Ture and Cross, you may find him not guilty. That instruction, one, wasn't given, but two, that's exactly what the government argued in rebuttal.
Well, I'll hold off on the rebuttal argument. That's why I was separating the two. But so basically what you're saying is that he may have been found guilty of a conspiracy different than the one in the indictment. That's what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that they convicted him because the instructions were such a mess, it permitted them to convict simply if they would have just found the two-person conspiracy, and that's enough to get a reversal. I want to say it's Graham, but again, well, I'll find the case that talks about this circuit has said that just because there's a sufficiency issue, or the evidence was sufficient, that doesn't obviate the issue.
And, right, there's still the question of prejudice, which I'm still waiting to hear.
But the prejudice here, Your Honor, is that again, we don't have to guarantee that they did this, but there's a substantial doubt that they might have convicted him based on simply finding a two-person conspiracy of Ture and Cross that, had they been properly instructed, the jury might have concluded that conspiracy is not the charged conspiracy. That's the substantial prejudice.
Is that a variance? I mean, isn't the harm then a variance? That is, he was convicted of a conspiracy that was not the one charged. That's a variance.
Well, I hesitate to say that because the variance assumes, at least my understanding of it, assumes that he was guilty of the conspiracy. He was guilty of both conspiracies, but was convicted of a different one charged. I don't think I have to concede that, because I think under these circumstances, they might have said, you know what, he's not part of this big Canada conspiracy, he's just part of this other conspiracy, but because the instructions simply say it just takes two, which is legally correct but a non sequitur here, the jury didn't ever have to differentiate between is he in both conspiracies or is he only in this separate two-person conspiracy. The record as it was established and the way the government argued the case and the constraints of the jury instructions were such that it allowed the jury to say, you know what, even if we just find he's part of the two-person conspiracy, not this bigger conspiracy. That's why I don't think it's a classic variance argument that he was guilty of both, but they mischarged it. I think that under a proper instruction that he was entitled to, the jury could have said, you know what, there's a lot of conflicting evidence, but if I'm not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that he was part of the big conspiracy, I only think he was part of this separate two-person conspiracy. That should have led to an acquittal. Under the instructions given and the way the government argued the case, it was effectively a directed verdict in favor of the government, which is just wrong.
Yeah. I have the instructions in front of me. I don't see anything that suggests a directed verdict in favor of the government.
Well, because
the court didn't say you must find him guilty of this conspiracy. And it was accurate to say that if you find an agreement between two, that's a standard charge. You don't have to find, even in the big conspiracy, you don't have to find an agreement with all of them.
True. But still.
So what's the evidence of, what was the evidence that he was part of a conspiracy separate from the whole chain? What is that evidence?
Well, again, remember, the chain is simply just the government's characterization, and there's always a factual issue, at least in theory, as to at which point chains break into spokes. But putting that aside, there is no evidence at all that Cross had any contact with any of the other defendants. Now, I know that isn't a defense per se.
I thought the evidence was that he discussed Big Brother, the source of Toure's heroin.
It was perhaps mentioned on maybe a phone call between the two or in a conversation.
Well, that's evidence.
Well no, and that's why, Your Honor, I didn't make
this. Evidence.
I'm sorry, Justice.
We call that evidence.
No, but the thing is, though, yes, there's some evidence in there. That's why I'm not arguing.
And he discussed pooling their money to purchase a kilogram of.
That's a separate argument. At least it was asserted that the reference that Toure makes concerning my drugs, and then there's a discussion that maybe these guys should pool their money to essentially become their own drug dealers with their own separate distribution chain. The discussion concerning the Comfort Inn Hotel has to do with Cross bringing in his crew to kind of help out, whatever. There's at least
no doubt that he knows who the source is, right? He knows there is a source. He knows that Toure is not manufacturing the heroin.
But Your Honor, I'm sorry.
Yes.
But everybody, in Mathis, this court said that just because not everybody who is.
But that was a different set. That wasn't just a chain conspiracy. Under your theory, every case in which somebody is buying from a middle-level person has to be given a multiple conspiracies charge, right? Isn't that what you're saying? In every case, even if you know that the mid-level person you're buying from is himself buying from somebody else, you have to give a multiple charge?
I don't believe the court has to write an opinion saying that, because on these facts, again, factually.
Well, what are the facts that make this case different than the more than the everyday agreements between somebody to buy when you know full well that it's coming from somebody higher up?
One, buyer-seller, not a problem. Two, factually in this case, with respect to the search warrants, with respect to looking at the phone records, with respect to the phone conversations, Cross had no other contact with any of the other alleged co-conspirators.
The law isn't that you have to have contact.
No, but
right?
Judge, but that's...
You just have to know that this conspiracy couldn't continue without other players higher up on the chain. Isn't that right?
But here's the thing, though. That's a factual issue for the jury to resolve. I'm not saying that there isn't sufficient evidence that the jury could have said no, the inference, whatever, but the point is that on this particular case, there were facts that, if believed by the jury, they could have
found. What are they?
Well, the fact that he only dealt with one other person is a fact the jury could consider. The fact that he wasn't in sort of like their close, I mean, there was some evidence that the people that had Big Brother's trust were, you know, they had some family history or there were some connections. There were a variety of factors here that had Cross way on the fringes that factually a jury could have said, you know what, this guy was friends with Turay. That's not contested. They obviously generally talked about certain things, but he only dealt with this guy. He had no other, there's no evidence that he had contact with anybody
else. I'm not hearing an answer to what I understood to be the question.
Well,
what makes this different than the plethora of buyer-seller cases that are part of a greater conspiracy? You were asked, does the trial judge have to give that instruction, separate conspiracy instruction in every case? You said no, there are facts in this case that make it different, and I'm not hearing any facts that take it out of the norm.
Judge Sentel, in many of the, even the buyer-seller cases, there's at least some evidence, whether it's through phone records or not, that a particular defendant has some.
And in many there aren't. Many of this evidence is just about like this here. This looks pretty normal, doesn't it?
Well, in most of the cases,
it's not your first rodeo. This looks pretty normal, doesn't it?
It's not. It's not bizarrely unique, but I think the focus with respect to how little evidence there was that had any connection makes it fair game for the buyer-seller instruction.
Okay, or my colleague.
He got a buyer-seller
instruction. I take that back. A multiple conspiracy instruction.
Yeah.
Okay. And
as you were misspeaking, I was mishearing. So, but Judge Garland got us to the right.
No, I correct that. Can I briefly just go to the second point?
Yeah, I think you take a couple minutes and do that. We've
right.
talked you past your time already, but we'll go on to the second issue as well. Give him 3 minutes more.
So just so I'm clear, your response to Judge Garland is that most of our cases, the lower downs, know the other people or many of the other people or at least some of the other people in addition to the main supplier. I mean, I'm thinking of cases you cited in your brief. So it's not that because the buyer-seller instruction was given that necessarily the judge has to give the multiple conspiracy instruction, but is it the fact that there is evidence that your client knew that there was a Big Brother, you know, a main source here, such that, as Tarantino warns us, we have to be careful about the chain. And so it's a jury question. They could have found your client guilty, as they did, based on the charged offense, but they also might have, if you'd gotten the instruction you wanted, been able to find that he was not guilty of the charged conspiracy.
Judge Rogers, that's exactly right. And again, it's not, I'm not making, that's why I'm not making a sufficiency argument. But again, when I sit down, I'm going to find.
You are making a sufficiency argument, as I understand it, that there was sufficient evidence for the multiple conspiracy charge.
Yes, and given the standard, remember the sufficiency standard with respect to the instruction is there some evidence in the record, so it isn't the sufficiency with respect to
as in a variance.
And a variance.
Your argument about that there's sufficient evidence is that there's insufficient evidence that he knew about the others, right? That's the bottom line.
Arguable, Judge Garland. It's arguable, and it's a jury question as to whether or not they should have been able to weigh the factor. The other thing is,
but I want to know what is the evidence that is sufficient for the multiple conspiracies charge. As I understood, what you're saying was the absence of evidence that he knew and had contact with others in the conspiracy, right?
It's that plus this. He is a buyer-seller, plus the fact that there is evidence in the record that these guys were considering sort of being their own distributors and pooling their money.
That's not what he was charged with, and they didn't do that.
No, there was discussion of that, though, which shows that they were...
That they were considering being part of a different conspiracy.
Buyer-seller. The guy is griping about all the... Touré's griping about all the things. They were problems. They did play pool together. Buyer-seller. Hey, let's conspire. Let's agree to distribute drugs where we will be the main suppliers. And then when they have the problem at the Comfort Inn, I believe there's one of the tapes where one of the phone calls where Cross says, I'm going to bring in my boys or my crew or my homies to clean things up, whatever. That's an entirely separate chain of command that has absolutely nothing to do with regard to the charge big Canada conspiracy where all this stuff was coming in. That should have been a jury issue for the jury's consideration. I know I'm way over my time, but with regard to the second issue, I think that, you know, I'll just be really brief on this because I think it's pretty clear in the brief, that even if the court says no with respect to issue one, the problem of confusion, unfair confusion, and a conviction based on a wrong theory was amplified in the way that the government argued the case. And I think they should be even a stop from arguing that there wasn't evidence of a two-person conspiracy because the government argued in closing argument. They argued in closing argument that you can convict even if you just find a conspiracy between Touré and Cross. The fact that the government argued that, I respectfully submit, doesn't make the whole line of questioning that we just went through irrelevant, but I think but with respect to the proposition that on this record we're going to deconstruct it and find it was insufficient, the government's argument at rebuttal, that final punch where the defense doesn't have any opportunity to respond, the government made it clear that an alternative theory of finding the defendant guilty was if you just find this two-person conspiracy. And based on the fact they didn't get a multiple conspiracy instruction, based on the fact that they got a kind of a pablum unanimity instruction, that left open the possibility that they could convict solely on finding that there was a conspiracy between Touré and Cross, and the unfair prejudice in addition, because I know there's some suggestion that, well, there's no unfair prejudice if there's only one defendant. The spillover, and that's just not the law, the spillover is that all of this other evidence came in about this massive Canada conspiracy. If it was simply just the two-person conspiracy, which the government argued was sufficient for conviction in their rebuttal, and they can cut it any way they want.
That's not how you framed the error, though, that the evidence coming in. The other evidence came in before the conduct that you say is erroneous.
So. No, that's correct, though, but the argument, when the government finally gets to rebuttal, and they argue that you can convict even if you just find the two-person conspiracy between Touré and Cross, my argument is, with respect to this substantial prejudice, is that, or one of the arguments is that if that's the basis of the conviction, to sort of rebut the argument that there's never any prejudice as a matter of law when you only have when you only have one defendant, simply isn't the case, because the spillover here was that the jury heard all this evidence, and they might have said, you know what, we're going to convict this guy because there's this huge heroin problem going on in the...
Your original argument was that you should have gotten an instruction that would have said they could find him guilty if they found only the two-person conspiracy.
You would find him not guilty because that's not the charged conspiracy.
That's what would have been your original argument.
Excuse me?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll hear from the government.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Catherine Kelly on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, first of all, in regard to the multiple conspiracy instruction, the government did, as early as its papers on the motion where the defense counsel asked for the instruction, the government did, in fact, object to giving the multiple conspiracies instruction at all because there was no basis in the evidence. And also, the government argued in the alternative that if the court didn't agree that there was no evidentiary basis for the multiple conspiracies instruction, that the language that the defense counsel had proposed was legally incorrect. And that was the government's objection. So there was certainly no point where we were arguing or agreeing that multiple conspiracies
you
instruction.
You did not submit any alternative language on multiple conspiracy that would have been legally correct.
No, because we didn't believe that that was a proper instruction to be given, given the evidence that had come in at trial. The government did.
Could not it have been possible for the jury to have believed part of your evidence but not all of it? That is to say, the evidence that did support a conspiracy between the buyer and the seller, but not the evidence about the rest of the conspiracy. Would that not have been possible?
It's possible the jury could have believed
possible,
various
then
parts.
If it's possible, why shouldn't this instruction have been given?
The court, though, first, before the jury even gets that, has to determine whether or not there's sufficient evidence or if there's evidence at all in the record that supports a multiple conspiracy argument. And here,
that goes back to what I just asked you. I thought you conceded that it was possible for the jury to believe the evidence about the two conspirators and disbelieve the rest of it.
Well, we
you
don't
said
see any,
yes, I thought. If that's the case, then why isn't that a sufficient evidentiary base for a multiple conspiracy instruction?
Because to show multiple conspiracies, the defense has to show that there are separate networks operating independently of each other, and you didn't have that in this case. You had one major distributor of heroin in Canada, Mr. Johnson, who was distributing then to Mr. Touré, who was in turn distributing to Mr. Cross and other wholesale distributors in the local area. You had a shared common goal.
The defense has to show?
That's
it doesn't have to show anything. In fact, they typically do not. The question is what your evidence is, isn't it?
Well, that's correct. But in asking for a jury instruction, the defense has to show that there is some basis in the evidence.
Yeah, and you just told me there was, didn't you? Didn't you say it was possible for the jury to have believed that these two were conspiring but not believe the other evidence?
I don't know what my point in saying that is. I don't know what the jury ultimately believes or doesn't believe, but the first point is that the court has to make a decision based on the evidence that it's heard, whether or not there's any evidence in the record of a multiple conspiracy situation, and here there was not. You don't have separate networks that are operating independently.
What do you think this court was concerned about in Tarantino when it says we have to be cautious about this chain conspiracy theory of drug distribution?
I think
I'm following up on the Chief Judge's question to you.
In Tarantino, there is a concern that there has to be some indication that there are not separate conspiracies going on. For instance,
in other words,
side deals or things that have absolutely nothing to do with.
I don't see the word absolutely in Tarantino. I mean, I think what the Chief Judge's, I can't speak for the Chief Judge, but I thought his question was getting to the point that we emphasized in Tarantino.
In Tarantino, the court was saying that the main thing in proving a chain conspiracy is that the conspirators shared a common goal. And
I think you ought to take a look at Tarantino at page 1393. The paragraph that's being discussed says, chain analysis must be used with care. Even in a vertically integrated combination, certain players may have performed activities wholly unrelated to the aims of the conspiracy.
Exactly.
So that's the question, wholly unrelated.
Right, and that's my point here. You have a shared common goal to distribute heroin. This isn't even a situation where you have more than one drug, and it where there could be, you know, different players making deals to sell cocaine, for instance. It's not a situation where you have a variety of suppliers like you did in the Mathis case. You have one supplier in Canada. You have one regional supplier, Mr. Touré.
Anytime someone buys drugs from a seller, they are part of the larger conspiracy because obviously the drugs have to be coming from somewhere.
Not if you have that separate buyer-seller relationship.
But I thought that's what Tarantino's expressing some concern about, that otherwise, anytime if you were to buy drugs from a person selling them, the government could charge you with conspiracy going all the way to Canada and this larger network. And that's why in all these cases, it seems to me the district courts have given the multiple conspiracy instructions so the jury has this option.
Here the court gave the buyer-seller relationship instruction, which ultimately what you're looking for in getting the multiple conspiracies instruction is giving the jury an alternative to say, sure, maybe there's a conspiracy here, but my client didn't join. And that's ultimately what he got in getting the buyer-seller relationship instruction. And that's ultimately what the closing argument by the defense was. They're saying the defense conceded that there was this conspiracy. They were just arguing that this defendant was not a member of the conspiracy. And that's really what you're getting when you get the multiple conspiracies instruction, too. So we would say that even if you could say that there was some error in not providing multiple conspiracies instruction, it really wasn't substantially prejudicial. The court instructed properly. The defense argued, as I just said, and the buyer-seller relationship instruction put forth in front of the jury, as had the defense counsel, that you're telling the jury that you can't convict this defendant unless you find that he was a member of the charge conspiracy. And whether you're calling that a buyer-seller instruction or whether or not you're also getting a multiple conspiracies instruction, the jury is aware of that through the court's instructions, through the arguments of counsel. So there isn't any substantial
prejudice. So we should ignore the rebuttal closing argument?
I don't think you have to ignore the rebuttal because we don't believe that there was any error by the government in making that argument.
What do you think the prosecutor told the jury?
The prosecutor told the jury he was, first of all, when you look at it in context, which the court is to do.
Let's look at his actual words.
His actual words were that the prosecutor's reiterating what the elements of conspiracy were, and he's turning to state the first element of conspiracy, that between May 1st and November 6, 2009, an agreement existed between two or more people to distribute or possess with intent to distribute heroin or both. And the prosecutor was then saying that you don't have to prove that there's an argument between Johnson, the three couriers, Mr. Danso, and all these people. That element that the government is speaking of just says that there has to be two. And here the government can show that there's an agreement between Mr. Cross and Mr. Touré. And as Judge Garland pointed out, that was an accurate statement, saying that there was an agreement between two or more people.
Yes, given that, why did the government at the initial charge conference not consent to the giving of a multiple conspiracy charge? You said the one that was tendered was legally incorrect, but surely the government could have come up with a legally correct one and said if...
Had the circumstances in this case supported a multiple jury and multiple conspiracies instruction, there are certainly a way to give that instruction properly.
How would you have been hurt by the giving of that instruction? Wouldn't your life have been a lot simpler now if that had been given?
Not really, because you have
have to be right about the evidentiary question in order for that argument to make sense. Now, suppose you're wrong. I mean, sometimes people think the government's wrong.
That's true.
Why didn't you hedge for that bet and tender a legally correct multiple conspiracy charge?
Because you still, in this case, don't have any evidence that there are separate networks. That
you're not hearing my question. Assuming the possibility that you're wrong, why didn't you tender that? I mean, what was the harm to the government in tendering, saying, well, we don't think there is sufficient evidence? But if Your Honor thinks so, then give this version rather than the other version.
Well, we actually did say that in our motion papers.
Did you have a version that you tendered?
Our suggestion was to change the language
So I'm wrong on that point, and I'm willing to concede that I'm wrong. So.
No, she said they did tender.
So I was wrong in saying that they hadn't.
We didn't tender a separate instruction. We just said if the court finds that there is an evidentiary basis that you can modify the version that defense counsel has given you. It's page 48 of the...
Now you're getting there. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So just so we're clear, in rebuttal, the prosecutor told the jury on two separate occasions that all they had to do to convict here was to find the agreement between the defendant and Mr. Touré.
You have to find an agreement between two or more people, and that here it's Touré. But the government also said that they were not saying that we think that there are not others involved in the dispute, namely Big Brother. So
last sentence. Jury, all right, after having said it earlier, he says, if you just focus on the conspiracy, just two or more people between Mr. Touré and Mr. Cross to distribute drugs in that time frame in the indictment, you've got to convict.
That's correct. And our argument is that in the rebuttal, the government is responding to the argument by the defense in closing that there wasn't any evidence that this defendant agreed with all these other people that he hadn't met or spoken to and so forth. The government correctly stated the conspiracy law, and then the court had correctly instructed the jury on conspiracy law. So even if there was some sort of error in the government's statement, the defense still has not shown that there was substantial prejudice in this case. Any time, as Your Honor can see in the rebuttal argument, any time the government is mentioning the elements of conspiracy, the government is also reminding the jury to go back to the court's instructions. Don't rely on what the government or the defense counsel has said in regard to those instructions. The government said that no less than three times in the rebuttal, reminding the jury that it's the court's instructions that can control.
Judge never told the jury what the prosecutor said in rebuttal is not legally correct, did he?
No, that's correct. The court did not say that, but we believe what the prosecutor said was, in fact, legally correct. The prosecutor was referring and making those statements to the first element of the conspiracy law, that you only need an agreement between two or more persons. The court instructed on those same elements, and there was no evidence of jury confusion in the deliberations. There were no notes indicating any confusion over the law of conspiracy. And anyhow, the evidence that this defendant was a member of the charged conspiracy was quite strong. This is much
conspiracy in this area is not simple.
It's not simple, no, Your Honor.
Right.
No, it's not. But in any event, regardless of any sort of alleged error in this case, we don't believe there was any substantial prejudice, mainly because the evidence did support that there was a single charged conspiracy and that this defendant was, in fact, part of it. You had
in your brief, you argued he knew about the other people because of this man named Mack or Miller.
Mr. Miller had a stash house where Mr. Touré had stashed.
So how does that show the defendant's relationship to Mack Miller?
It's not showing that he had an individual relationship with him. It's one piece of the evidence that shows that he's in part of this larger conspiracy.
So if you buy drugs from somebody and somebody says, oh, I also sell drugs to A, B, and C.
That can be part of the evidence. I'm not saying that alone would win the day. But here you don't just have that. You have the regular numerous sales of wholesale amounts from Mr. Touré. You have Mr. Touré testifying that he had told Mr. Cross who his supplier in Canada was, that he was a Nigerian who was living in Canada. He was telling Mr. Cross the amounts of heroin he was bringing in to the country.
You know, we have all these cases involving sort of families, the K Street crew, the M Street crew, the R Street crew, and there are all these relationships. And counsel talks about his client didn't fit the profile. And you say there's no evidence of profile. But isn't that what he's getting at?
He argued that at trial that there was a profile that you're from West Africa, and that's what it takes to be a member of this conspiracy. But as we pointed out, there are people that were not from West Africa. They came
from. But all this goes to the evidence as to his proffer as to why he was entitled to a multiple conspiracy instruction.
That's correct.
Not that you didn't have other evidence, but that there was this non-evidence as well, that's all.
Well, we would say that the defense did present that argument about relationships to the court at trial, and the court did not find that
sufficient. So the government, let me just understand what the government's understanding is. In order to get a multiple conspiracy construction, a defendant must be able to point to evidence that
There's separate networks that are operating independently of each other, and that you have some sort of
separate. So if he's dealing only with one person,
he's individually dealing with one person,
right?
Who he's well aware is getting his drugs from Mr. Johnson in Canada.
So there is no way to buy drugs and have a completely separate network under the government's theory.
Not in the facts of this case where you can clearly see that there's one network. There's one major supplier in Canada. He's selling to Mr. Touré. Mr. Cross is directly getting those drugs from him. This isn't a matter where Mr. Cross is going off to a different.
My question.
I may be misunderstanding.
Right.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Because I think you are arguing that there can be no multiple conspiracy instruction.
I don't think in facts similar to this that there can be a multiple conspiracies instruction.
Okay.
You have one chain going from Canada to Mr. Touré to Mr. Cross. And in other cases that we've cited in our brief, example, Graham, Gaviria, Thornton, the fact that there might be other distributors at Mr. Cross's level doesn't warrant
multiple. There should not have been a multiple conspiracy instruction in Tarantino.
That wasn't argued on the appeal, but I...
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand the government's position.
I would say, in just looking at page 1394 of Tarantino, the graph that's drawn there is much more detailed with a much larger group of people and interrelationships than we have in this case. So that may be a case where multiple conspiracies instruction was properly given.
But you just said there were more interrelationships.
Well, I mean...
That wouldn't be the basis for a multiple conspiracy instruction.
In that you have, Your Honor, side deals. For instance, when you look at the brokers and sellers, you had a broker named Mr. Burns who has side dealings with somebody named Rivera and Kostranakis.
And it was all coming from a source.
And you
the
also...
Same, this is a side deal that the defendant has with Mr. Torre.
No, there is no side deal with Mr. Torre. All the drugs are coming from the same source.
And that's a factual question, isn't it?
That is a factual question, but to get the jury instruction...
So the instruction never should have been given in Tarantino. That is the logic of your argument. It has to be. At least the way you're presenting it here.
What I'm trying to say here is that the line of heroin is much clearer in just a vertical up and down conspiracy situation than it was given the diagram in Tarantino. And that actually a lot of the evidence that the defendant is claiming shows multiple conspiracies actually shows Mr. Cross's involvement in this conspiracy. The fact that he wanted to possibly buy and pool his money with Mr. Touré together buy a kilo from Mr. Johnson up in Canada, that doesn't show a separate conspiracy. That supports that Mr. Cross is not only involved in this conspiracy, but wants to become more involved in it. He wants to become a direct buyer from the Canadian distributor. The fact that Mr. Cross is telling Mr. Touré that his homeboys are going to go and try and clear out the evidence from his Comfort Inn hotel room shows that he is a member of this conspiracy. He's not just sending his friends to clear out the evidence. He's calling Mr. Touré to warn him that there's a search warrant impending and that, don't worry, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to send my friends to clean out the evidence. If he wasn't a member of that conspiracy, he's not going to be bothered calling Mr. Touré to tell him what's going on and also telling Mr. Touré, make sure no one follows you. You don't know the scope of their investigation. He's
I don't
not
know
gonna...
why a jury couldn't have found he wanted to protect his source.
Well, he could find that, but that, again, would be an indication that he's not just buying once in a while from this Mr. Torrey, that he's actually very involved in this conspiracy. He wants to keep it going, and he wants to see that it's successful, again, forwarding the purpose of the conspiracy. And as for the idea that he doesn't fit the profile, there were other people in this conspiracy that were charged that were not from Western African nations. In fact, Mr. Torrey had never met Big Brother in Canada, Mr. Johnson, in person himself. He'd only spoken to him on the phone. So this isn't a situation where you have some close-knit group of people who are hanging out together all the time and have close familial relationships. They're from different nations even. So we would say that all the evidence in the case supported that there was a single conspiracy here and that Mr. Cross was in fact a member and that the instructions that the court gave adequately protected Mr. Cross's interests, and ultimately the instructions that the court gave boiled down to telling the jury that you can't convict Mr. Cross unless you find that he's in fact a member of the charged conspiracies or the charged conspiracy. And in that situation, there's no prejudice to the defendant in not getting a multiple conspiracies instruction. And were the court to find any error in the government's rebuttal, which we don't believe there was, again, those instructions would cure it. So for those reasons, we'd respectfully request that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
You give him 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of quick points. One, I cite in my opening brief Morissette, reversal for jury instruction errors required even if the evidence is otherwise sufficient to uphold the conviction. I know that's in some of the multiple conspiracy cases in the circuit as well. That's not a radical proposition.
But the question still is, if you don't give an instruction to which you're entitled, the question is harmless error, right? That's the standard for failure to give a correct instruction.
Yeah.
Unless it's a structural instruction, leaving out an element of the offense, which this isn't. And the only prejudice mentioned in your briefs, I know you started to mention some in oral argument, but really the only prejudice mentioned in your brief, and I think you actually have to infer it, is variance. The only prejudice you mention is the possibility that the person could have been convicted of multiple conspiracies, of a, not even multiple, but a small conspiracy rather than a big conspiracy.
A smaller, different conspiracy.
Yes, and but that's a variance question. So that is, what you're saying is that the evidence at trial was only of the smaller conspiracy, different conspiracy, and that that went to the jury, and that's a variance. What you haven't alleged at all are other kinds of prejudices.
Well,
is that right?
Two things. The other kind of prejudice is that, and it's inferred from the all the evidence of the case, if it's just a smaller conspiracy, there's all the spillover of hearing.
I know you could make that argument, but I didn't see it anywhere in the briefs. The word spillover is not in the brief. The word co-conspirator's testimony is not in the brief. The word prejudice from other players, none of that's in the brief. The only argument you've made here is a variance argument.
Well,
am I wrong?
I characterize it a little bit differently because the variance argument implies that he's actually guilty of this other charge that he wasn't charged with.
That's always the claim in a variance case. The defendant always claims, one, I'm not guilty at all, and two, at the most, I'm guilty of a variance. There has to be prejudice. What I'm really saying is this is a confusing area. I think that we're all right about this, that this is confusing. And I'm trying to figure out what's the underlying issue about what the error is when you don't give a multiple conspiracies charge.
The government's argument, essentially, and I think Judge Rogers was correct, under their theory, you would either never get a multiple conspiracy instruction in buyer-seller cases, and whether it's White, Baum, there's tons of cases in the circuit where they're given together, and the defendant is almost always convicted. The government here basically wanted to manipulate. They didn't want unanimity. They wanted the jury to find. They didn't care if the jury found him guilty of a 12-person conspiracy or guilty of a 2-person conspiracy. There's no question that that's why they fought so hard not to get the instruction. The court needs to grapple with what they're comfortable with as the case law here as to what kind of unanimity is required. And again, the last comment, the government then also argues that, well, they got the buyer-seller basic instruction. The buyer-seller basic instruction is not the same as the buyer-seller conspiracy instruction. In my brief, we talk about the other factors that are often combined with it. The government makes this argument that the separate networks, if it were that clear cut, one, you would never get a buyer-seller conspiracy instruction, or you would only get it in cases where it's an obvious fatal variance as a matter of law.
Can I pause over the prejudice question? Assuming that the defendant was convicted of the smaller conspiracy rather than the large, and assuming you're going to put aside your variance argument, you're going to argue spillover, there wasn't a small amount of evidence that he was involved in the 2-person conspiracy, right? There was a lot of evidence on that question.
Yes.
There was drugs found in his apartment and everything.
Huge amounts compared to the pipeline, almost like the Keystone pipeline from Canada drugs.
I understand. But once there's that much evidence of the argument that the person was prejudiced by spillover, seems weaker. I mean, it's one thing if the spillover is a bunch of murders and that bleeds over onto your defendant who was only a small player, but that's not what we're talking about. We're either talking about huge amounts of heroin or small amounts of, moderate amounts of heroin, but he's only charged with the moderate amounts of heroin.
But Judge, the prejudice is he's entitled to be tried and convicted or have the jury evaluate what he's charged with.
I understand that's, but that's variance thing. I'm just asking you to separate the two. Main prejudice you're really focusing on is the variance.
Well, yes. Yeah. Again, construed that way, yes. Let me just, with respect to, though, the closing argument, though, of which there was no instruction otherwise, and the government says, and in this case, we can prove simply Mr. Cross got into an agreement with one other person. That's two. In this case, Touré. But we believe there's no dispute that the other people involved, namely Big Brother, but for the purposes of finding him guilty of the crime charged, all you need is two, Mr. Cross plus one other person, Mr. Touré. If that's going to be their denouement, final closing argument, then they really can't get up here and say that there's no evidence in the record that supports this two-person conspiracy, because that was their final gut-punch argument, and the government loves their rebuttal because that's their last word. I was a former prosecutor. I know that. The jury instructions didn't clarify this. There's no unanimity instructions that explain what's going on. The government wanted to get a conviction, whether or not the jury collectively said, yeah, he's guilty of drug dealing. There might have been six who said he's guilty of this Keystone Pipeline from Canada. There might have been six who said, no, it's just the buyer-seller conspiracy. The general buyer-seller instruction is inadequate here. And I believe the case law, both with respect to unanimity and whatnot, this question goes away. The case law in this circuit is very clear. This issue goes away if the defendant would have received the buyer-seller instruction, even amplified the way the government wanted to do it. They wanted to get in the inferences from Tarantino, which makes sense, because otherwise the guy on the bottom end might always be able to argue. And as I think Judge Santel pointed out, if you don't get inferences from the larger thing, then the guy at the bottom can say, hey, man, I'm not a part of this. But the balance has to be between, or otherwise we're back to Mathis, where everybody who sells drugs for profit, everybody knows that Touré he's not Rumpelstiltskin of heroin. He didn't turn straw into heroin. Everybody knows that it's coming from somewhere else. But that doesn't mean everybody is involved in some mega conspiracy. And again, the reason why I broke it up the way I did with respect to the two issues, I think as a matter of law, Cross was entitled to the multiple conspiracy instruction for a lot of the reasons Judge Rogers pointed out, because then Tarantino shouldn't have gotten, and Tarantino was a chain case as well. But separate and apart from that, the way the government, and I won't use prosecutorial misconduct, but prosecutorial error, they unfairly manipulated and used it as a sword when the defense counsel couldn't argue multiple conspiracies. She did her best to kind of cram it into the buyer-seller relationship. But for them to come back and say, even if you just find this two-person conspiracy, that's unfair under these circumstances. The court doesn't have to paint writ large and solve all of the issues with respect to this really messy area of the law. But if the government is going to exploit the closing argument in the way they did, that's unfair. That is manifestly unfair and rises to the level of substantial prejudice requiring reversal. And I thank the court for allowing me to go way over.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, the case is submitted.